woman once came to meditate for 2 weeks at Dhammasatit. And her second day there, she came to see John Fuang. Said, "I have to go home." He said, "Why?" She said, "I'm worried about my husband and my children. How are they going to eat? Who's going to wash their clothes? Who's going to look after the house?" He said, "Tell yourself that you've died. They'll have to be able to look after themselves one way or another." So every time that thought comes up, just remind yourself, "I've already died. Can't go back." And so she took his instruction and was able to stay for the whole 2 weeks. Of course, that lesson is immediately relevant to our staying here, away from the responsibilities of our work and our family. And it's one good way of cutting through all the entanglements that we tend to carry with us. It's like a knife to cut right through them. To remind you that you've got to stay right here, and there's no use in worrying about your responsibilities outside. Afraid that the world can't get along without you. It'll do perfectly well, or perfectly horribly, whatever, but it's going to do its old world thing, whether you're there or not. Helps cut through your sense of self-importance and focuses you on the business that really needs to be done, is straightening out your own mind right here and there. But it's also a useful teaching to use when you go back. When issues come up that cause you worry and distress, just tell yourself, "I'm already dead." It helps put the issue into perspective. And although on the surface it may sound morbid, it's actually not. It's actually liberating. I know of someone who was participating in a series of seminars on death and dying. And for one of the seminars, the teacher took him aside beforehand and said, "Okay, I want you to tell everybody when we go into the room that you're already dead. And act as if you're already dead." Not, of course, not lying there like a corpse on the floor, but having the attitude of someone who has already died and who's able to come back for a brief visit. And he found it liberating. He could talk to people with a lot less concern about what they might think about him or what he could get out of them or their approval. And then the following week when he came back for the next course, he was his old self again, alive. And one of the women in the course took him aside afterwards and said, "You know, I liked you better when you were dead." So it's not morbid. It's actually liberating. It's freeing. To be able to look at all your worries and all the concerns of daily life from this perspective, you get a true sense of what's important and what's not. And you find yourself acting not out of worry for the future, but with that question, "If I were to die tomorrow, what would I like to have said today? Or if I had a chance to come back after I was dead, what would I want to say to this person?" This practice is recommended for people who already have developed a sense of what's skillful and what's not, and desire to do what's skillful. Because there are people in this world who would like to come back and inflict a little revenge if they had the chance. But if you're serious about doing what's skillful, trying to be compassionate, trying to have integrity in your actions, respecting everyone's desire for happiness, then this ability to think of death as not all that scary, but as a lifting of fears. And living your life in that, with that perspective. If I were to die, and we're looking back on my life, looking back on today, what would I wish I had done today? What would I wish I had said today? Knowing that most of your ordinary worries and cares are rendered pretty meaningless by death. And then live your life from that perspective. Say the things you will have wished you had said. Do the things you will wish you have done. And if you stop and think about this, you see a lot of what you will have wished you had done has to do with training the mind. When you're dealing with other people, you will wish you had said the kind thing, the helpful thing, the appropriate thing. Something that wasn't worried about what you could get out of that person or what you wanted that person to be, but simply expressing your concern, expressing your compassion. And looking at your own mind, what will you have wished to have done? You will have seen that the skills you developed as a meditator, being mindful, being alert, having a sense of restraint, proved to be really useful, and you would have wished you could have done them more. There's that story John Lee tells about an old woman who came to the monastery, and she saw one of the walking meditation paths was dirty. So she swept it and set out some water. Felt really good about it. And so it happened on her return home that she had a heart attack and she died. Reborn as a deva. And asked herself, gee, what did I do to deserve this? And the memory came to her that she had swept that path. So the thought occurred to her, suppose I had done more of that. I'd have an even nicer palace, an even nicer setup here. So she went back down and tried to find a meditating monk, found one out in the forest, and just stood there staring at him to see what she could do for him. Turned out he had psychic powers. He could see her. Chased her away. He said, stop trying to butt in on human beings' merit. You had all that opportunity when you were alive. Stop being so greedy. Let human beings have a chance to make some merit. So she fled back to her palace. The lesson here being that when you have the chance to do good, do it. And learn how to see which of your concerns are important, which ones would be rendered meaningless by death. And remember, oh yeah, I am going to die. I don't have all the time in the world. I do have this moment. What's the best thing to do with this moment? How can I make the most of it? And when you look at each moment from this perspective, you're using what the Buddha called the recollection of death in the right way. It's not meant to be depressing. It's not meant to be discouraging. It's simply meant to get your priorities straight as to what's important and what's not. And it lifts a huge burden off your mind. There's no way you're going to be able to tie down all the loose ends of your life. All your outside affairs. But you do want to have developed as many skillful qualities in your mind as you can, because those are the things you take with you. Qualities that the Buddha calls noble treasures. Conviction in the Buddha's awakening and what it means for your life. In other words, he was able to find true happiness through his own efforts, developing qualities in his mind that you have in a potential form in your mind. Virtue. Being restrained in your actions, not harming yourself, not harming anybody else. Having a sense of shame and compunction. Shame here doesn't mean you're ashamed of yourself. You're just ashamed at the thought of doing something unskillful, that you know better. You're a better person than that. Why are you doing that? Compunction is a fear of the consequences that come when you act in a shoddy way. When the mind says, I don't care, gets irresponsible and apathetic, you don't listen to it. You realize your actions do have consequences, and you've met up with the consequences of unskillful actions in the past. And do you want more of those? Well, no. This is a healthy fear. And it's a treasure. If you have shame and compunction, you don't do things that you will regret later. And regret's one of those things that once it digs into the mind, nothing you can do to get it out. No amount of money can make it go away, which is why shame and compunction are treasures. There's learning in the Dharma, which means not only listening, but also thinking about it, questioning it. When the Buddha taught, he didn't teach us nice-sounding platitudes or didn't offer things for your reflection without being responsible about what he was saying. Everything he said had meaning. And he recommended that the monks question him on it. There's something they didn't understand. But you were doing him a favor if you questioned him right then and there. That was his attitude. So he's not here anymore, but you want to question his teachings. How do these things have meaning for my life? Ask yourself that question. Do your best to figure it out. And to put the teachings into practice. To test your understanding and refine it. To see what he really did mean about mindfulness, alertness, ardency. Another treasure is generosity. You know that someday you're going to have to give up everything you have. So before it's wrenched from your grasp, learn how to let it go. If you see something that you have and someone else could use it well, make a practice of giving it. The mind gets lighter, it gets more expansive. That sense of spaciousness in the mind, when you're not always worried about losing this or being deprived of that. That sense of space can't be bought. And then there's discernment, the ability to see things arising and passing away in the mind. So that you can understand what's skillful and what's not, what needs to be developed, what needs to be abandoned. All these things are treasures. And these are the things that stick with you, even after you die. So from that perspective, these are the things you should be focusing on. So when you tell yourself that you've already died, it's not to make you depressed, despondent, hopeless. It's just to put everything in a clear light. And the dispassion that comes from seeing things in that clear light is not depressing, it's liberating. There's a sense of relief. You've put down all your petty concerns. And you let yourself focus on the things that are really important. So that way you are alive. You're living your life well.